yearning to play a few rounds of Gwent. That ought to set me straight.
Welcome to Commander's Horn, episode 29. Today we are joined by Rethis from CD Projekt Red to talk game design and balance as we approach the latest big patch for Gwent. The Gwent Challenger has been announced as well. We finally get to see Gwent on the big stage. Let's talk about that. All this and the latest test realm changes on this episode of Commander's Horn. Welcome back to Commander's Horn, a weekly Gwent podcast. We have got a great show for you. I am Dane McBeard, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Josh Greyboxer. How are you today, my friend?
Dude, I'm great. I am really excited that we just got some breaking news for the podcast.
We did get some breaking news. We are recording the news a little later than we normally would. We are recording on Wednesday and also posting today as well. Most of this podcast is prepared because we did have a great interview with Rethis from the development team. V-Man, you can find that a little later in this episode, of course. So we recorded that on the weekend, and we got around to the news today. The test server that we have the privilege of playing on with some other very dedicated players received an update today. So we're going to talk about that in the news as well. Yeah, so breaking news today. It's going to be a very current podcast.
So we're excited to get into these changes. But first, McBeard, what have you been up to? How's life? How's streaming? How's Gwent treating you these days?
Yeah, streaming's been great. With one small exception, I am dealing with a small issue with my internet service provider. So it is causing my streams to be a little slideshowy from time to time. But generally, I've really been enjoying it. I'm back to full-time streaming. I've been starting earlier than I was. And, you know, kind of getting back into that daily stream life, which I love very, very much. And playing on the test server as well. I've been trying lots of different decks. Today was a day with Skellige that we enjoyed. How about you? How have you been enjoying it?
I've been doing the same. I've been playing on the test realm. I don't think I've played on live for 2 weeks now. Ever since, I had a minute where I was like, you know what? I'm going to try to get into this Challenger series. And I'm like 3750 MMR. And I realized this is not happening, and I want to commit fully to the test realm and try out these new decks, and that's what I've been up to. We did, guys, if you haven't seen it yet, the Commander's Horn YouTube channel has released a video this weekend. We did a couple new decks. McBeard's trying out a Gels deck versus my Nilfgaard, so check that out, Commander's Horn YouTube.
Unfortunately, because of these changes to the test realm, the video is a little bit obsolete as far as mechanics are concerned with cards like Ragnarok, which we will talk about again.
You'll get to see the difference because there's a huge difference now.
You will get to see the difference for sure. But yeah, I mean, the MMR, she comes, she goes. What do you do? So Challenger, we will not be challengers, but we will definitely be following the progress. We can talk about that and so much more, of course, right after this short break. All right, folks, top story, I think, is this news came out. This is, you know, it's not super current news because this came out like the day after we posted the last podcast, but it is the Gwent Challenger. It is the Gwent event. It is going to be the top of Gwentertainment. It's the event we've been waiting for this, right? This is the CD Projekt Red ESL Katowice Big Stage Gwent Tournament, right? This is so huge.
Yeah, this is the high stakes tournament, guys. This is, we're talking about a closed beta having a really high-end tournament here. We're talking about the Gwent Challenger Series. If you haven't paid attention, the guys over at CD Projekt Red have teamed up with ESL, and they are hosting a huge Gwent tournament.
So we have everything you need to know in the show notes. Check the link out. It is at the, you can find it under playgwent.com/en if you are English speaking, /tournament. The link is below as well. But we're give you a quick rundown as well. So not everybody who signs up for this tournament, or who signed up, I guess, past tense, because at this point, the qualifiers are cut.
Just concluded.
It just concluded, yeah. So when, so you know, once that sign-up period is done, which is today, the highest-ranked 256 players from each of the two divisions, Temeria or Redania, it's time-zoned, but I imagine that you can't apply for either. You just can't apply for both. So those players, a total of 512, will be selected to participate in the day one qualifiers as long as they've applied correctly and they are ranked high enough and they are able to participate. But it is going by where you are on the leaderboard position.
Yeah, and this season's been going on for a long time, and so it's really going to focus on the dedicated players who have committed their time and effort into learning to be the best they can be on this current Gwent patch. And we've just learned that the actual qualifiers are going to take place from those top 512 players on April 8th. There's going to be two tournaments, 256 apiece, starting with Division Redania at 12 p.m. GMT on April 8th. And the other 256 from Division Temeria will be starting at 12 PST. And that's Pacific Standard Time. And you guys will be competing using four self-constructed decks each. Each deck must represent a different faction in this tournament. So at the very end of this all, 16 players from both time zones will advance to day two. Two finalists from each time zone will compete in Poland at the ESL event against four selected opponents by CD Projekt Red.
Those opponents are well-known names from other card games, such as Hearthstone specifically. So there is Trump. You may know Trump. He's probably one of the most prolific Hearthstone players, content creators, and he is representing Tempo Storm. You have Life Coach, who people have grown familiar with in the Gwent community recently. He represents G2. There's PPD, who is known as a Dota. He's the CEO of Evil Geniuses, so Evil Geniuses also represented here. He's been playing Gwent for a little bit as well. And finally, Noxious represents Team Complexity. He's been playing Gwent for quite some time. I think he's been on stream playing Gwent for probably maybe the longest out of those four people. Haven't seen Trump on it, but I think Trump's going to be, you know, he's going to want to do a good job. So expect none of these players to be slouches. You know why? Because the prize pool for Gwent Challenger is 100K US funds. First place gets 60. Yeah, payday for sure. First place gets 60K, which is a salary. Second place gets 20K. Third place and fourth place get 10K each. Not too bad for playing a couple rounds of Gwent. Best of three, four decks, one ban, no sideboard. Swiss competition begins. So basically, you're going to be up against eight opponents. You're going to want to win at least six. And even if you win six, you're not guaranteed to advance. But you have to win at least six of those eight, I think. And it is a conquest format. So once you win with a deck, you can't use it anymore. And if you lose three matches, you are out. That is part of the rules.
Yeah, because, again, three losses and you're out. But what you'll be competing with, you have to have four different decks ready, one per faction. So this isn't for the lighthearted. You've got to be really into Gwent to have competitive decks because you're going to be competing, or rather the competitors will be competing using their current GOG accounts and, of course, are limited to all the cards that are unlocked on those accounts. So we're talking about PC players only.
So yeah, so PC players only at the moment. I think that there are still, you know, limitations with the Xbox system and the friend system. Not much you can do about it. But you can make some assumptions about this. So we know that the tournament, the big stage tournament, will be broadcast on May 13th. That's not new information. It is in the tournament rules and regulations if you do some digging. And so that's the big day. So we can make some assumptions about that. I have a feeling, and I have absolutely nothing to base this on, but I have a feeling that this tournament will have a tournament client at the very least that will allow us to have some sort of pseudo observer mode. And I think that maybe it won't be ready for the public around this time, but there will be something that allows us to see both hands because this is, you know, this is the tournament, right? This is the event.
Yeah.
I think that's a safe assumption.
Yeah, I mean, it's hot takes over here, McBeard. Yeah, I think you're right that maybe we'll see something new. If we're going to see something, it'll happen at this tournament, especially to do with spectator mode, since spectator mode is so important to competitive card games, and especially to the people who are watching. So I'd love to see, even if it's some alpha version of spectator mode coming out at this tournament.
And, you know, we've seen a lot of community-driven tournaments that have made, you know, they've made it work without having a spectator mode and having some cut videos. So I think probably worst case scenario, something can be done. or even maybe just to crush my assumption, something can be done and there is no full observer mode ready at that time. But let's see. I think that that's a safe assumption to make for sure. So the Gwent Challenger, it is, you know, it's the big show. I'm so excited.
This is huge. It's going to be really, really intense. You know, the competition is going to be really tight because we're talking about the top 512 players on the current Gwent leaderboard going to get up against some of the best card game strategists and talents out there. So, you know, I don't think there's anything else to say because literally this will be the most competitive tournament that we've ever seen.
What more is there to say? I mean, that's the landscape. So we're really excited for Gwent Challenger. We'll keep you updated as things go on, as the information comes in. But some information came in today as well. So there has been an update to the test server, and you can take these updates kind of with as a companion to our previous episode where we talk about a lot of the changes that had already occurred. So if you haven't listened to that episode and you're interested in knowing what a lot of the large-scale changes to this patch were, but there's more stuff that was changed. So there's some things that we didn't talk about in that podcast, and one of those things was Ragnarok. Ragnarok has seen a number of different iterations in this testing phase, and this testing phase has been very public, by the way. Lots of people who stream and create content and just generally, you know, play at a very high level have been playing the game. So on this test server, so it's been pretty healthy. Lots of games being played. The next meta already kind of being built by these players. But Ragnarok, as I was saying, the state that it's currently in right now, it is no longer a weather effect. It no longer applies weather to all three rows. It's not weather-based whatsoever. It now removes two base strength from up to 8 random opposing non-gold units on the battlefield. Your maximum potential with Ragnarok is 16 strength, and it also vaporizes foglets, I guess, is another thing you can say. How do you feel about this change?
Well, I'll tell you that this might be an unpopular opinion alert, but I don't like Ragnarok as a card at all. I never liked it to begin with. I don't like playing weather, so I never played it back when it was weather, and so I never really felt it was OP. And yeah, it's really powerful. And if it's a final card, it's really strong. I don't think that CD Projekt Red likes that huge finishing card anymore, so they've been working on Ragnarok. Ragnarok, what it used to do before it just changed to what we just said it does, it used to be like a giant, like, base strength Saskia, where it would hit the entire opposing board for -2 base strength and then add 1 to your entire side. And I didn't play it back then. And that was, you know, earlier this morning. So now that it's even worse, I'm not interested. McBeard, you've played against it today. What do you think?
Well, I didn't play against it. I also didn't play it. But I do want to say that in its state where it was removing base strength from the entire opposing board and adding 1 base strength, everything on your board, it was so strong.
It's a gold.
Like it or not, whether you like it or not, it was super strong. And it still did with the spirit, kind of what Ragnarok has always done. And it's just an incredibly huge, it's an incredible swing card in the right situations. And in this situation now, it's the longer the round is, generally, the more units on the board for you and your opponent, it was really good. In the weather situation, when it created weathers on all three rows, you could probably play it after your opponent passed. And, you know, if you had a deck that catered to using that card and you weren't against a bunch of weather immune units, it would probably secure you that round. So now it doesn't rely on weather. It's strong against weather, and it still can get you a fairly large swing. Although after experiencing it in its previous incarnation, I think 8 random units is pretty generous. Without the self side buff, without your buff, I think that it's probably, I am struggling to find a place for it, but I think it maybe just takes a certain deck.
Well, what happens if there's only 4 units on the board?
It only hits what's on the board. So in Stamelford's current state is very similar, in which it hits it hits up to 6 random units for 2, like just removes 2 strength, but not base. Ragnarok is just a little bit stronger version of Stamelford's, and I feel like compared to Stamelford's, it's like the base strength is not, you know, it's not anything to discount.
Yes.
I think it's hard for me to evaluate because I saw it in such a strong form, and it just changed like this afternoon, so I haven't had a chance to play with it.
Another huge change is the card that used to be the bane of Ragnarok. Back when Ragnarok was three weathers and everybody could run the rally slash first light card. Back when it was the way it used to be. Clear Skies used to clear all three rows. Then it got changed to one row. Now it's back to clearing all three rows again. So the reworked Ragnarok, because Clear Skies wasn't enough to answer it. And then First Light and its Clear Skies component got changed to now remove all three rows. So this is a huge increase in power to First Light. What do you think about that?
It's a return to form for First Light for sure. And now we're seeing First Light in a landscape where there cannot be more than one weather played in a single turn. So that's pretty huge. And I think that people had a problem with a bronze card dealing with a silver card or a gold card, be it Skellige Storm, White Frost, Marigold Hailstorm, or Ragnarok as well, as they were dual and triple weathers. But the thing about weather is it's really strong. So having multiple weathers at a time was an identified problem. And now that there is no way to do multiple weathers at once, First Light can now act as a 2-for-1 against weather. It hurts weather overall just kind of by its existence. If you invest too heavily in weather, you can get burned by First Light. So people may be back feeling like it's not fair, but at least it's not canceling out what a silver or a gold card was doing by creating multiple weathers, because those cards don't do that anymore. So I think that weather being in the place that it was in, because weather will always be strong in its current state. So I think it's okay to have such a hard solution. I mean, Diamondium Shackles right now is a huge solution to gold cards with persistent effects. We'll talk about that next. I think that's probably worth talking about next. And, Marjoram is now your solution to huge, huge buffs. And they're all bronze cards and they're all tech choices, but you don't have to spread yourself so thin with special cards now, I think, with bronze. And I think that was an issue. I didn't like spending too much of my deck space on special cards, generally. Right. I like putting units in my deck. I like maybe leaving space for 3 or 4 or 5 special cards, personally. And I felt like with the way it was spread out before, I had to cover too much. Now with these cards doing so many different things, now with Marjoram now reducing strength, like Diamondium Shackles used to, and also debuffing base strength, which is at 2 now, by the way, and with now First Light going back to removing weather, all the weather, I think that it's a little easier to make these special card inclusions, and I think that it's fine right now. I think weather is going to see a large rework in general, so I'm counting on weather being sort of a placeholder right now.
Yeah, and it's fine with First Light right now, because the way weather works is you don't expend many resources as a weather monsters player to put weather on the board. But playing against weather right now, you have to be stocked full of First Lights just to have an answer. And you're never going to have as many answers as they've got weather. So the change to First Light is warranted. They commit to a lot of weather. You can commit to only 1 or 2 bronze First Lights. You'll be fine. But as it is right now, they can lay down 4 to 6 weathers, and you've only at most got 3 answers. So, I feel like the change is fine. I don't think it's earth shattering. I don't think weather is going to be horrible. I don't think these changes are the result of lots and lots of testing. And right now we're going to go into the unknown and check it out.
Absolutely. Let's talk about Diamondium Shackles. So, full transparency, Gray Boxer and I talked about Diamondium Shackles quite a lot for the last podcast, but then we found out that the changes to that card were not final, so we cut it all, and we had like a pretty lengthy conversation about it. Now that it's been a week and we've played with it, first of all, Diamondium Shackles used to be a card that reduced all buffed strength back down to base and then demoted gold cards. Now Diamondium Shackles is different. It still demotes gold cards, but now it applies a locking effect to those cards, gold or non-gold, but it no longer reduces buffs anymore. So it works like how other cards like Cleaver and Ox were working with lock. So it is now consistent with other locking cards, but no longer debuffs. The debuffing is now taken on by Marjoram. So just so you're up to speed on Diamondium Shackles, a lot of people thought that Diamondium Shackles was going to be very, very strong, possibly too strong, because in the changes that we discussed in the last podcast with the interaction with gold cards, it seemed like Diamondium Shackles was the only way to really counter gold cards, because you can demote and lock them and stop them from basically doing what they do Meanwhile, all these other cards that remove strength from gold cards, they don't target gold cards anymore, so they're more resilient and yet have a newfound vulnerability in Dimeridium Shackles. It's been a while now. Gray Boxer, how do you feel about Dimeridium Shackles now?
I'm good with it. I like the inclusion of lock as a mechanic, and I'm enjoying the tug of war that happens between locking toggling, because you'll play something that you really want to have locked, right? You want to lock Villain Trenmirth. You want to lock Yennefer Conjurer as far as your gold cards go. You want to lock Lugos. But you can toggle that lock with your own Dimeridium Shackle. So I like the idea of baiting someone else's lock, right? I have Lugos in my deck. Not a lot of people run Lugos. So I'll play a Warship or something that might draw out their lock. And then whenever Lugos drops, they've already spent their Dimeridium Shackle. So I like the change. I think that splitting these four powers, right? Base strength removal, setting to base strength, locking and demoting, these four powers that have existed in Gwent, and splitting them between the two cards, Marjoram, which now resets to base strength and adds two or removes two, and then changing Dimeridium Shackle to apply a lock and also demote. I like the way the power has been split. I feel like you don't have to overcommit to a lot of these bronze cards in your deck, and I think they work really well. So far, I've been playing two locks in most of my Test Realm decks, and I play one offensively to lock somebody else's unit, and I play one defensively if they lock something that I don't want to be locked.
Now, we talk about Dimeridium Shackles with Rethis in our interview with Rethis, so I think that we can probably move on for now, because we definitely discuss it with a designer about the choices made to lock, so you definitely want to stay tuned for that. So a lot of these changes that happened today to the test server, which is likely going to be probably the last change until this patch is applied, based on no real knowledge at all, but...
Yeah. Based on knowledge and belief, we believe that things will happen when we think they might.
Although we're not thinking of a specific date, some people thought it was going to happen today or perhaps this week. That's not necessarily true, considering that when they apply a patch to the test server, you imagine the testing is going to need to occur. So we're playing some games. We're going to probably keep playing some games. I'm happy to keep playing games on the test server, but it would be great if it gets into the public's hands very soon, because a lot of these changes are really cool. So a lot of the changes that occurred were strength tuning. I'm going to quickly run them down. Stop me if you have anything you really want to talk about, but Dandelion goes up. Reinforced Trebuchet goes up to 6 from 4, and it's pinging every turn now for 1.
Because at 4, they're way too weak to needing a super long round. And at 6, they're now a decent resurrection target.
Operator is now 8 strength from 6. I think this is really cool, because you can probably use Alzir's Double Cross and get the Operator more often. You can change kind of the way your deck works. And Operator, yeah, you know, always a fun card to play with. Zoltan the Brawler, Zoltan Chive, is 8 strength now and resilient. He always was resilient, but essentially he can provide you with that 16 strength over 2 rounds. Morkfarg was nerfed back down to 6, so there is that. Morkfarg was proving to be a pretty strong card in the meta. Let's talk about the Bran change. So Bran is different now. Bran no longer buffs base strength when he uses his leader ability, which discards 3 cards from your deck to your graveyard. But to not completely neuter a Queensguard deck, they brought the Queensguards back up to 3 strength. So the Queensguards are now stronger than they were. Bran is less strong than he was, but you can play Queensguards to the same effectiveness, which is good. And I think that it's going to change Brand's strength level, with Morkfarg also going down. But I played against a couple of Brands today. I did have a quick stream before we started recording this, a quick 3-hour stream or so. but Brand is still fine. And I think, like you said, you play Madman Lugos in your deck. Madman Lugos is still really good, I think. You know, he still gets a lot of value generally the later a game goes, and I was beaten by that card. And Skellige, I think, still has a lot of power in King Bran.
Yeah, you need a lock for Lugos, period. Mm-hmm. And then they need to not have held one waiting for it. So one thing I'd like to add is that the change to Bran isn't a huge change. It's really between 3 to 9 value, I guess, right? If you could somehow replay all 3 of those cards that you discarded in every single round. So it's not a huge change for him. He still is doing the most important thing that he can do, which is trigger your discards. And whether or not you're running ships or pirate captains or anything else, if nothing else, he's just deck thinning. Yeah. And your queen's guards were buffed up by one, like you said, to offset Brand's change. This is fine. I think that the change to Morkvarg might not have been necessary since Brand was changed. But at this point, it's one strength. You're still going to play Morkvarg. He's great.
Well, I think you kind of answered your own concern. I think Morkvarg was really strong. And if you're saying that he's still playable, then he's still good at this. Even though he was nerfed in strength and then Brand no longer buffs in strength. Should be. I think he might be comfortable at six. But he was a really strong card. But we're talking about Skellige, so there is a pretty large change to the deck that Croc on Crate might be piloting. A self-wounding type deck, perhaps? So Croc on Crate, first of all, the Clan and Crate Warriors, previously 9 strength that wound themselves from 9 to 7, now only wound themselves by 1. They remove 1 strength and they come down as 8s. So this means that Croc on Crate's ability that summons 2 End Crate Warriors is a 16 strength leader ability on a dead board every single time reliably. 16 strength leader ability. I played this deck today, unrefined, just marching into the wild, wild world of the test server. And I did really well with this deck, and I'm not quite there yet. And there's more to this deck than just this change. But this change is notable. 16 strength leader ability. How do we feel about that?
It's the Wild West out there. It's what it's like. I think that Crack on Crate's probably playable now because of that. I think that even playable in the first round, with a Wartoot, he's 2 cards, 32 value.
It's
and then
true,
those
yeah.
guys are going to keep growing in the graveyard from the passive, and you can res them up and shieldsmith them in round 2. I mean, yeah, these guys are going to be all right. And that was a change to all Clan on Crate Warriors, not just the ones that Crack summons for his leader ability, or Croc summons with his leader ability. They now only reduce themselves by 1 strength. So we're going to see some Wartoot decks on the some self-wound on the test server.
Yeah, in a world where most leader abilities are somewhere in between a silver and a gold card, Croc on Crate is getting more value than some gold cards can provide, spawning 2 8-strength bronze units that can be Warcried. And before, hold your laughter, I did put 1 Warcry in this deck. And basically, I was running Witchers and Croc on Crate, and I would play Witchers, Croc on Crate, maybe Warcry right after that. And you just pass, and you have so much strength. And it really caters to kind of the way Skellige plays. Maybe you let go of the first round and you really focus on pushing in round 2 and round 3. One of the ways you can do it is with some of these changed cards. The Raging Berserker, which is the Berserker who comes out at 6 strength. He comes out at 6 strength, and when he is damaged, he comes out at 6 strength, and when any strength is removed without removing him from the battlefield, he transforms into a bear. The card's been around for a long time, seen tweaks here and there, but now the bear form is 11 strength, and it is still immune to weather. These guys, they transform into Aridin, or should I say Baridin?
Baridin! Are you going to be making a true King Baridin deck?
Well, I think I did today. No, but seriously, though, guys, it's 11 strength of weather immune units, bronze card. You can put 3 of these in your deck.
And it grows in the graveyard with a passive.
And yet you res them in their 13 strength.
Oh,
medics,
man.
Medics become a 16 strength bronze card with these things in the graveyard. Like, there's so much potential with these cards. I really believe in that.
Yeah, those guys are great. That's a really huge change. I think anything with like 11 base strength is going to be incredible. And to have those things go into the graveyard of Skellige that not only buffs by its passive, but also has priestesses to resurrect. These guys are great. Another card that was changed in strength was the Berserker Marauder was changed from 7 strength. Used to be 4. And tell us about what the Berserker Marauders do, McBeard.
So the Berserker Marauder, now he's a 7 strength card, and when he's removed from the battlefield, he becomes a bear that when you resurrect the bear, for each wounded unit on the battlefield, the bear gains 2 strength. So this card is very strong in a deck that is applying strength removal all across the board. However, I was playing this deck and I actually ended up taking this card out. I felt like it wasn't really necessary. I was trying to play the new Gengifret, who is buffed up to 8 strength from 6. It makes him competitive with Svanraga, I think, at that point. But I still felt like maybe it still wasn't necessary. I think that the Raging Berserkers are in such top form with their 11 strength bear form that when it comes to resurrecting things, it's really hard to justify resurrecting anything else than these insanely strong bears that are coming out of the Raging Berserkers. So it's a notable change. The Berserker Marauder isn't as slow a card, but I don't even know if you'd want to run more than I would need to experiment with a deck that ran more than one that didn't just try to get it into the graveyard as fast as possible.
I think you're right, McBeard. I think that we've got a bear problem on our hands. We better call the park rangers. But really, the Raging Berserkers are going to be the better card out of these two, I think. And as far as Gengifret goes, he was buffed up because Taller was. Taller was a 6 and is now an 8 in Northern Realms. The card that allows you to mulligan one card and in the middle of a match, which is really good for Northern Realms. Except that I don't know that Skellige really needs that. Or needs Gengifret. Skellige has really, really tight silvers because of all of its really great silver cards. So I think that, like you said, like Gengifret's not easy to play because there's so many better choices out there, even at 8.
And there's so many ways you can discard stuff. King Bran, Ermion, Last Wish, Svanraga, if you want to play that. Although I think that's why I believe that he's maybe competitive with Svanraga now. Svanraga's at 4 strength, Gengifret's at 8. But I think, and you can always target a raider if that's kind of what you want to do. I don't know if that's what you'd want to do. I was using him for the Berserker Marauder, but I don't know if it's I don't know if it's stronger than just maybe running something else in a deck like that. It is the test server, and we are still testing. So I personally wasn't thrilled with those cards, but maybe there's another way to run it. So there's some other strength. There are some other strength changes as well. Yorveth is now 7 strength and still removes 6 from non-gold units. Competitive with Vernon, who is buffed by Northern Realms. Vernon's still a little stronger, though we don't necessarily always want to compare between factions.
Yeah, so we always end up doing that, though.
Yeah, for sure. And another huge change for Northern Realms, this is some pretty interesting stuff. Redanian Elites got buffed up to 7. Which means that when they're all out on the battlefield, they are now 9 strength gold cards.
And oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. There is a deck that I was running, and I think you were also running this as well. I called it Full Test Elitist. But essentially, it ran Operator for an extra elite. You full tested an elite for a 5th elite, and then you had your graveyard full of elites and your field medics, which are now buffed to 4, again, if you're following along. You can get these guys to trigger on multiple rounds, also running Shanien and Nanika as well. So, you know, a good card that has seen a lot of changes throughout the beta, made a little bit better. I think that it's pretty strong, a 9 strength gold. I think that it's fair. It's always been 6, even when it was kind of broken and triggering twice and all these other situations that were happening throughout the beta. It was always 6, so I can't wait to test it out. I spent a lot of time with the bears today, but I'm going to probably test out the elites very soon.
Yeah, that's the deck that I built first on the test server and the only deck that I've been running on the test server besides my random Lugos deck and my Nilfgaard reveal. I've been playing Elites the entire time on the test server because I just want to see if I can make Northern Realms work because they buffed medics. And medics are incredibly powerful if you can have decent value bronze cards. We talked about this last time that the 4 strength medics, sure, they're limited by their randomness and the fact that they can only resurrect bronzes in a Northern Realms graveyard. However, with Redanian Elites being a 7 strength pull, I'm not running any Reaver Hunters. I'm not running any Temerian Foot Soldiers. I'm running Elites and Specials and Medics. And I'm going to be using these guys. This is my favorite change to Northern Realms, and I know it's so simple, but can you just imagine putting one of these guys down and then playing Philippa into reinforcement, maybe with Roach in your deck?
It's a really strong comp. That's a super strong combo, and you definitely we'd had some scrims, and you definitely showed me why it was strong for sure.
But you're right with the Operator. That's great. I love operating these guys and full testing them too. And you put 5 of these in your graveyard, there's a really good chance your RNG medic's gonna hit it. So mm-hmm. You can keep rebuilding this crazy row of value, and I love the change. I think that it's a good solid card. We're going to see a lot of these.
Yeah.
And Locke does work on a Redanian Elite, so you can prevent them from being full tested. You can remove them if someone's going to mess around and use Adrenaline Rush. Go ahead and lock that up.
Yeah, but I think that Operator and Full Test actually enables, you can still get three Redanian Elites with their abilities unlocked on the board, I think. Northern Realm's got a couple other buffs as well. Triss Butterfly's spell is now up to 6 strength, which means that she's 8 strength in Northern Realms, and she buffs your hand by 2. She can be resurrected if you demote her, and she will keep buffing your hand. Before, she buffed your hand by 4, but when she was removed, the buff went away as well. Now that's not the case. Your hand is buffed, and that's that. I think the card definitely has some potential. I want to see more decks run Triss, but I think that Northern Realms actually has like a bunch of different options now with all these new goals. But those are like the whole changes right now. I think it creates a totally different world already, in a world where Skellige Crokhan Crate is going all crazy with the bears, and Full Test is a little bit better than he was if you're running Redanian Elites. Did you have anything else to add? But there was one change I didn't talk about with monsters.
Yeah, the big change you didn't talk about with monsters is Woodland Spirit. Mm-hmm. Is now spawning fog only on your side. So you're not getting that control aspect out of Woodland Spirit, which is a really swingy card. Woodland Spirit is your 7 strength, now 8 strength, gold card in monsters that spawns fog, now only on your side, and spawns 3 wolves. Now, normally, if you're running one of these, you've got foglets. Not every time, but most of the time. And so it ends up being a huge power swing on your side of the board, and it's control on the other side of the board if your opponent's playing on the ranged row. So what they've done is they've buffed Woodland Spirit to 8 to maybe make up for the fact that he can't play fog on the opposite side.
Yeah, it hardly makes up for it, but I think it's important to note that Woodland Spirit really was very strong. You could run him in a non-weather deck, and now I think that, you know, you would run him in a weather deck exclusively now, because bringing out those foglets is really important. Woodland Spirit is worth 17 with the 3 foglets, the 3 wolves, and him now at 8. Is that correct?
Yes.
That is correct, yes. So it's still worthwhile. You know, Woodland Spirit is now... I guess more fair. I think since the very beginning of the beta, everybody understood that Woodland Spirit was one of the best golds in the game. Not complained about so much. Maybe I wasn't seeing the complaints, but I think that everybody, you know, it's too bad if you like to run Woodland Spirit outside of weather decks, but I think that the fact that he was just so good outside of weather decks was kind of something about it wasn't quite right. So weather decks, still fine. Drawing out your foglets, still good. 17 strength for 1 card played, still decent, I think. You know, but still nerfed.
Listen, you know. I think monsters is going to be okay. And you know who we've got in the studios today? A big fan of monsters. Coming up next is our interview and discussion with all the changes coming to Gwent with Rethus.
I'm just going to start recording now, and because Rethus, you are a returning guest on the podcast, one of the few people we can say that about, and it is so great to have you back on the podcast so soon. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you guys?
I am well, and Grey Boxer?
I am really well, really enjoying the PTR, loving the changes, and loving to see the result of a lot of what I know is hard work.
Yeah, hard work. Exactly. I would imagine very hard work.
Cool. It's good to hear.
So, Rethus, you are very active within the community. You post often on Discord and Reddit, and your presence is at a level that has brought forth a lot of appreciation from the community. How important is it for you to get direct feedback from the community, let's say in a raw material sense, whereas you are getting comments directly out of Reddit, sometimes could be harsh critiques from users? You get to catch people saying very candid things about the game's design. How important is that type of feedback for you?
I think it's very important, but something that's a key thing is that you always need to take everything, you know, kind of with a grain of salt. And often you need to try and look through the top level of the feedback to actually kind of get to what's underneath. We've had quite a lot of feedback recently about some things that are changing on the PTR, like Radovid and Stamford's Earthquake and some other things, and You know, the surface level feedback is obviously, you know, very easy to see, but there's obviously some kind of core points that are hidden underneath that, which is what people, you know, kind of really feel or really think about things. So that's kind of what it's sometimes a bit hard to get to. And in terms of the feedback itself, I mean, I get feedback in a lot of different ways, and you know, we don't necessarily base changes just on what players say. That would obviously be, you know, not necessarily the best way to design and make a game. It's always a combination of factors, whether it be data, which we have a lot of collection of our own data, including on our test servers. You know, player ideas and feedback, our own ideas and feedback, and you know, we've been inviting some players to the studio to kind of test on site, including Garuna, who's, I think it would be fair to say, probably, you know, one of the top five players in the world. So we get a lot of different feedback from people.
And so one of the things you mentioned, first of all, that's really awesome that you're bringing people in. We know how much we enjoyed being brought in, and to reach out and bring people in who have this sort of higher level understanding of the game and strategy has to be so important to designing cards and trying to balance. But what I want to know is, when you have all this data from the live server, since there's thousands and thousands of people testing in the closed beta, when you have something like the test realm happening right now, and it's more like 100 or so people, how do you deal with the data from that? Because it's a much smaller sample size. How do you analyze all that information?
It is a smaller sample size, but those players tend to play the game a lot, because they're obviously, you know, we picked people that are really super passionate about the game and obviously, you know, wanting to play the game a lot. So even though those users might not, you know, there's over 150 users on the test servers during this stage of the testing. And we actually hope that in future updates, we'll try to make that much more publicly available. But, you know, even though there's, let's say, 150 people, if each of those people has played, you know, 200, 300, 400, 500 games, you know, in some cases, they've been playing a huge amount of games since we opened the test service. So there is actually quite a lot of data, and also a lot of it's, you know, observations that we can make based on player kind of trends that they do. And I myself, you know, as you know, I spend quite a lot of time talking to players and gauging their reaction to things on our test servers. I've played many games against different players to test the out strategies and decks and so on and so forth myself as well. So, you know, again, it's the same kind of thing as, you know, on our main servers. It's just a combination of different factors that make up kind of not necessarily what the right decision is, because there isn't always a right decision. There's just different decisions. And, you know, we try to make ones that we think people will enjoy and will make the game more fun and more balanced as well.
Hey, what is it that you see in the data that makes you want to look at something, maybe red flag it or mark it for a potential increase or decrease in power or something to work about the, you know, rework the way it interacts? Is something you're looking for in the data that appears on the PTR that might not appear in live?
I mean, it's the same kind of things that would appear in live. It's just we obviously try to make sure that those don't get to live. And we've, you know, we definitely have made some mistakes in the past, and I wish we could, you know, go back and hotfix the neckers earlier on live, for example. But, you know, we made a decision not to do that as we were kind of pushing this new patch and trying to make sure it's finished and put out. So, you know, for example, one change was, you know, that we could see was out of hand was the point values of the Imperial Brigades. I think they were buffing +3 from all the disloyal units, and, you know, we could see in our data the point totals of the units that we're getting to, and some of them were getting to like 40+, which, you know, isn't really intended for a unit like that that's played so simply. I mean, if you have an Axeman that gets to 40+, but the player's invested like 7 or 8 cards in kind of getting it there, it's a little bit different, and it requires a little bit more effort. The disloyal buffs from those units, when you combine it with Calviat, for example, was, you know, quite out of line with what we would want for the units.
So let's talk about a little bit of, I have some questions about balance, if that's okay. I think that's something that you're eager to talk about, maybe.
Depends what your questions are, I guess.
No, these are,
I'm kidding.
Like,
I'm kidding.
Decision-making, I think, is my favorite thing when it comes to actually balancing, because we know this patch changed a lot, and I think it was really clear that you had some specific agenda items for this patch. One of the standout changes seems to be the restrictions on previously, let's say, capless abilities, such as Commander's Horn, Hawker Healers, Stamelford's Tremors, cards that really are only limited by the amount of units on an infinite row or board.
Mm-hmm.
Was the idea to decrease the number of, let's say, bomb cards in the game across the board? Is that kind of an end goal for the design?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it depends kind of what you mean. That we obviously want some high impact plays, but we don't want them to be like, you play this card and you win. And I think that there's one type of card left in the game that does have that at the moment, and it's weather. And we're aware of that, and it's something we, you know, I've talked before, I think even to you guys, about the fact that, you know, we have some long-term goals for weather. It's just, they're quite complicated in order to... It's a very complicated thing to change because it's so integral to the game. But it's definitely something that we are always thinking about and always working on for the future. But in terms of this patch, yeah, it's, you know, often if you would play Commander's Horn in its past version, you would have, you know, doubles and it can be everything on the row. It just pushes you to stack everything on one row. And you get like, just kind of silly exponential growth in its older versions.
Mm.
Even especially when you would be like double and triple horning, it kind of would get things out of hand. And you know, for some people that's fun, but it's more something that you could expect to see in the single player version of Gwent, as in single player campaigns in the future, is, you know, really crazy mechanics and ideas getting out of hand on purpose to create, you know, fun and challenge. Whereas in the multiplayer game, things obviously need to be balanced. You know, if you're playing against another player and they suddenly just drop this card and there's nothing you can do and you can't ever win, that's not a good, fun, or engaging multiplayer experience. So we're trying to, you know, remove and reduce things that lead to that kind of behavior.
One of the cards that was not affected by this that still has sort of that limitless potential is one of the cards that was initially picked to maybe be changed first in the positioning patch, and that's Lacerate. Lacerate has got this really cool upside where it is limited in damage to being only three per unit, but it is the entire row, which if we're continuing to see row stacking could have extreme value, especially since the rest of the cards have been changed to only affect adjacents or two adjacents and so forth. What was the decision-making process behind leaving Lacerate and maybe changing the rest of them?
So we do want some things that were in the game that would punish row stacking. As in punish it too much. I mean, if you think about how many units you can have on a row or maybe should have on a row, then, you know, you kind of have where Lacerate is at a good point. Lacerate's 3 value per card. I mean, if you're stacking 8 units on a row, then you might want to rethink your strategy potentially. So it's kind of there to punish row stacking. And, you know, in many situations, I think in the next update of the game, you won't be able to get full value out of Lacerate, but it'll still be an okay removal card. So, you know, we purposely want to leave that in the game for the moment and see how it goes. And, you know, if it becomes a dead card, then it's something we'll look at. And, you know, if people are still row stacking, then we'll need to look at what we can do to you know, discourage row stacking a little bit.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the design philosophies that I've kind of understood from your team is that there are no bad cards. Like there is no desire to make a card that's just maybe too different or too has too unique an effect if it means that the card won't be played anymore. Like there's no desire. Like when you look at other card games, sometimes they'll print bad cards to kind of make sure that the pool is diluted in power. But you always want to have your bronze and silvers and golds to have roughly sort of the same power level to encourage more diversified deck building. Is that correct?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, we want pretty much every card to be played. There are some cards that are designed to kind of be fun cards as well, and those might not see the same kind of levels of play as some of the more core cards, but we don't want any cards to be kind of just like throwaway filler cards. I mean, even if you look at Vanilla Geralt, you know, he is still played at the top level of play in some specific decks, and, you know, that's a great thing, and it's something that we want to continue, you know, exploring and make happen. I think, you know, especially when it comes to, you know, microtransactions, if people are paying money to get kegs and cards within them, if some of those are junk, it's not really something, you know, that we're particularly okay with. We want people to feel like they got, you know, value for their purchase.
Yeah, I can understand that. And I think that that's a really good place to start whenever there's a patch happening. And I think that this is a really good spot to ask you about the changes to gold cards. So, Rethus, gold cards have a newfound resiliency. It used to be that other gold cards could damage them, Herald could damage them. And before the beta launched, I was opposed to golds being subject to any of these effects, being a hardcore Witcher 3 Gwent fan. So it is kind of nice to see a return to golds no longer being able to be damaged. You can count on your gold strength, the cards that you invest in your deck that take up those limited four slots. You can count on their strength staying for their, or staying with you for the most part. What led you to this design decision?
So we've considered this many times, actually, and adding gold damage to the game was kind of an experiment that we wanted to try out. And we let it play out, and we found when designing new cards that it made it incredibly difficult to design gold cards that were quite powerful in terms of like having a, you know, a special ability, but they were as in passive abilities. So take Yennefer the Conjurer as an example. Yennefer the Conjurer should probably have been a little bit lower statted than she was originally, and the reason she wasn't, I think she started as a 7 in the live game in her first incarnation, was mm-hmm. because she would be immediately removed by Yorveth and by, you know, and by Radovid, for example. And there's some combination of other cards that you can do, like you could play Vernon Roach and Triss or Radovid, you know, whichever the case may be. But so it kind of made it pushed us into a position where we couldn't really make, you know, high impact gold abilities with low power. Like you can imagine that there could be a very powerful gold card that's a 1 that does something, you know, unique and interesting over time, but that card just wouldn't have existed in the game as it was right now, because even Yennefer Unicorn would have killed it. So there's so many different ways to kind of get rid of that card, and it's not getting rid of it temporarily, it's getting rid of it permanently, because in most cases, unless you're taking, you know, Renew, you wouldn't be able to get that card back on the board. So that's part of it. And the secondary factor as well is for new players as well. Gold cards are kind of a safe haven, especially when you look at things like weather. So, you know, we encourage and we want new players to be playing, you know, gold cards as kind of a big power safe haven to account for whether they might have their other cards be damaged or debuffed by weather or whatever the case is. So those are some of the main factors, and you know, we hope that these changes will encourage, you know, some healthy play and healthy ideas in the future.
Right on. One of the other things we saw in this patch, there are some cards that I feel like over the patches they've been trying to hit a sweet spot. Three examples that I can think of are Donar and Hindar, the Witchers, and the Crones. We see their strength fluctuate from patch to patch. Are you happy with, what is the ultimate goal with these cards? Is it a certain play rate? Do you feel like you're happy with the design where they are right now? And do you feel like there actually is like a sweet spot you're trying to hit for viability, power, and kind of what should be worth that spy slot or those triple silver slots?
So in terms of the Witches and the Crones, we made an update to the Witches, which was to remove the potion synergy from them. And that's partially because, you know, the design team feels that generally it's going to harm us in the long run and limit us with the design of future potions. Because you kind of need to keep the Witches in mind with them. And if you think about the fact was, the idea was that you get like 1.5 times the power from a potion. And sure, you could just reduce that to be like 1 extra, but if it's 1 extra, it's not, I'm not sure it's a worthwhile synergy at that point, because then you'd be getting like, you know, 1 extra value out of a swallow potion, which honestly I don't think is, you know, really a huge worthwhile investment that would push you to take a Witcher. And on the Thunderbolt potion, it would give you, you know, +3 now, which again wouldn't be, I'm not sure it's a huge incentive to take it. So, you know, this part of this is just kind of for standardization and simplification of explaining some abilities in the future with much shorter and more more concise and more understandable tooltips as well. So, you know, we've kind of been fluctuating their power based upon different changes in the game, like this one, for example. And, you know, we often see suggestions that's like we should just step them to be like 5, 6, 7 and the Crones to be like 6, 7, 8 or something along those lines. But then they become exceptionally difficult to remove. We want two of them to be on the same ceiling. whether it be a high ceiling or a low ceiling, so that they actually can, you know, there are some, you know, quite easy counters to them. And whether they should be on the epidemic side or whether they should be on the scorch side, that's kind of something we're still trying to figure out at the moment.
And I just want to ask you, do you notice that the play rates are going up or down specifically with Witchers with a power nerf maybe on the test server?
At the moment on the test server, they're kind of being used for deck thinning mainly. And I mean, they've always been used for deck thinning to some degree, but I think on the live servers right now, the Crones are definitely used for pure power as well. And the Witchers are kind of used for a mixture of power and deck thinning. And I think if they're going into the realms of not being there for kind of a tempo play and more of a deck thinning play on the Witchers side at least, then that might be okay. I mean, we're still kind of thinking about their values and we'll keep an eye on them. You know, it also depends on how it works out live as well. So the Witcher's play rates are quite healthy right now, and the Crones on live are probably a bit too much.
And I want to ask you one more card that I like to say gets stronger the less people use them, are Spies. And we specifically mentioned Donnar and Hindar. And he's been changed a lot this patch, and it might not seem like much, but it is kind of a big change, where now Donnar and Hindar, the spy in Skellige, will draw one card, then you can select to take it in your hand, or you can select to discard it. What was it that made you want to change him? I thought he was all right. He was still a decision to be put in the deck. I didn't know that he was problematic.
So, Donnar's just part of some kind of standardization that we're doing for spies for the future. So, you know, our aim, and again, you know, things can always change, is to kind of have, you know, one spy per faction that's silver. So you can imagine that there's currently one missing in the monsters deck. And we kind of want to standardize them to some degree across all the factions, because then it makes the card draw a lot, the card draw advantage at least, a lot easier to control. So if you look at Cantarella and Donnar and Stennis, they're really quite similar at the moment, and that's kind of a purposeful choice on our part. So you can expect probably some more standardization kind of in that area. So, you know, and he still kind of has the Skellige flavor in that if you choose to get rid of the one card, you discard it. You can imagine, you know, we might do something with Nilfgaard where you would purposely put that card on the top of the deck, or, you know, in a specific position in the deck, maybe at the bottom, I'm not sure. It's just still something we're kind of figuring out which way we want each of them to go flavor-wise.
Cool. A newer mechanic introduced to Gwent in the Nilfgaard patch was locking, and for a full competitive cycle, we had Cleaver, and we had Ox, and we had Ithleen, which I didn't see her very often played against me, but she was there, and she was part of the locking kind of set that came out. Was this intended to be a tempered approach to locking? And what made the team more comfortable with introducing more locks into the game by way of Radovid and increasing the strength on those locking characters, as well as the change to Dimeridium Shackles now being a locking mechanic?
So generally, we like the idea of locking as kind of a removal a lot, because it's kind of a temporary removal rather than a permanent one, and it links back to our discussion about gold cards at the beginning. You know, if somebody plays, you know, Yennefer Conjurer and it's a 4 on the board, and you play Yorveth, you gain, you know, your 6 points from Yorveth, but you also make the opponent lose those 4 points as well. In the case of Radovid, with some gold cards, you would be making them lose a great deal of those points. You know, lock is kind of a softer removal. It removes the ability, at least temporarily, and we're pretty comfortable with the change because you can just unlock it to bring it back if you wish to. So I think that the way a lot of people will play those cards is that if you're relying on a card which has like kind of a really powerful ability, the drawback to it is that it can be locked. But you're going to want to take one of your own locks in order to unlock it yourself, which I think is okay. And there's going to be many decks which don't rely on having that kind of thing in their deck, and therefore those players, you know, lock would probably in many cases be a dead card to them, so they won't be incentivized to take it. So I think it's just that it's kind of a less harsh form of removal in some ways, and that's kind of why we like it. And yeah, we wanted to test some things out with the previous patch and see how they went, and you know, we don't see that those cards are seeing super unhealthy levels of play. And, you know, I can, myself and the design team, we can always be wrong. But on the test server, we're seeing the kind of behavior we expected with Dimeridge Gym Shackles, is that initially everybody thinks it's incredibly powerful, and then when they actually play with it, they find out that often it's kind of a dead card, unless you're doing specific strategies or you're against specific strategies. So we hope it'll turn out to be, you know, quite healthy and a good change for the game, because we really like the idea of having options, and, you know, it being a toggle gives you more options, much like is the case with, you know, even just some simple things that we added to the game, like making Adrenaline Rush a toggle. Instead of being a dead card, sometimes it can actually be worthwhile. So, you know, we'll keep an eye on it and see how it goes, and hopefully things will work out in a good way.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things about the change to Dimeridium Shackles, is because it's a toggle, and you're going to want to, if you have a card that can be toggled with the Dimeridium Shackle, you're going to want to run one of your own. For me, from a design perspective, what was the thought process behind, okay, we have a bronze card called Dimeridium Shackle. It will demote and lock, but we have Cleaver and Ox and Radovid, a leader ability, that doesn't demote, but it either removes value in the case of Radovid, or has its own body. What is it specifically when you try to balance out these silver cards that have a body versus a bronze card that might have a stronger effect?
Well, I mean, you touched on the key point there, which is that the bronze card is, you know, it in some ways it's a stronger effect, but in other ways it's kind of weaker, because in many cases it'll be a 0 point play. And sure, you can stop the player getting, your opponent getting more value in the future with something else, but it doesn't debuff the target. So, you know, if your opponent has an Axeman that they buff to be 20 and you lock it, you're just stopping them gaining extra value. You're not getting rid of the 20 value, because we've removed the debuffing component from Dimeridium Shackle. And in the case of things like Orcs and Cleaver, you know, they have a body, which is always important. It allows you to buff it if you have other buffs. And also it gives you board presence in terms of those points that are associated with that card as well as the lock. So, you know, they're a less powerful, like, ability, but with higher point value on the card itself. And in terms of Radovid changes base strength as well, so he has his own kind of niche as well. You know, Radovid versus Foglets is going to definitely put a dampener on some monster weather strategies. And, you know, that's kind of a purposeful choice on our parts. You know, the Foglets are, they're a risky play in some ways, in that they can be countered. And because they're so kind of easy to get value out of, I think we're pretty okay with that change. And again, we'll see how it goes and see how players respond to it.
Because you're so involved in the community, I wanted to ask you if you felt that there were any particular cards or changes that have had the most passionate community opinions, let's say. Talked about Dimeridium Shackles, people anticipating that it was very strong, and now through testing, it looks like it's probably going to just settle in just fine. Were there any other cards or any other changes that you felt had opinions that surprised you?
Yeah, I'll comment on a couple of those, but I will, harken back to an episode of Commander's Horn where Grey Boxer and McBeard were talking about how massively overpowered Dimeridium Shackles would be when it went into the game. And then almost no one played Dimeridium Shackles.
You mean, so, and then when you made Lugos buff base strength and Kairin buff base strength after that
episode? No,
things did happen.
So, I noticed that. Because those are the two cards we talked about that bronze card would simply break. And I felt that Kairin was going to be such an awesome card, and it was really, really a cool mechanic. And I felt terrible that maybe this new bronze card, which also had a cool mechanic, would break it. And then it buffed base strength, and so now all it did was demote it, which was, I think, pretty cool. So
you were more scared than I was, I think.
For sure, for sure. And on this patch, it's the same case.
Yeah.
Every time. I just love Villain Trettenmuth so much. Like, it's my that and Igni are my two favorite cards, and I'm so worried about my Bork.
So it's in terms of the reaction, I think we've seen a lot of reaction to Yennefer Conjurer, and we purposely tried out different ideas with her, revolving around Shackle and not having Shackle and so on and so forth on our test servers. So, I think something that people should remember for the future is that when we're doing things on the test server, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to end up in the game. we haven't had the ability to do proper test servers really before. We did with Nilfgaard for a little while, but it's something we want to take advantage of more, especially when the game goes to open beta and release. We don't want to be launching things into the game which aren't ready, because the game won't be in closed beta at those points anymore. So, you know, it's something players need to kind of take with a grain of salt when they see them be posted. Like, there was a lot of rumors flying around that Vernon Roach, Triss, and Yorveth all did random damage to targets, which just, I don't even know where that came from.
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's never been the case, but it was thrown around a lot, and there was, you know, a lot of visceral reaction to that, which, you know, was kind of just unnecessary, because I think, you know, there's this whole kind of anti-random movement going on in card games, and I honestly think it's a little bit extreme. I mean, Gwent actually does have a whole bunch of random things in the game, and always has done, and a lot of those things work out just fine, and because you can kind of predict and gauge the chances of the randomness, even just drawing cards to the hand and drawing and playing a card is random by nature, and those things work out just fine because, you know, you have a limited deck size, you can control it, you can sometimes control which cards you're taking from your deck, and so on and so forth. So I think that, people just need to be a little bit more reserved before making judgment, because until you actually play it yourselves and until it's on the live servers, it's very difficult to make calls about what's going to be the case. And I see so many statements that are like, you know, Dime Reach and Shackles is going to ruin the game. And I think if you asked players on the test server what their opinion of it was, I think it would be quite different. But again, you know, we can always be wrong, and maybe there's some major problems that we haven't foreseen. And if that's the case, we'll adapt to it and change it. But there was one interesting one I read, and I've read it a few times actually, which is about Fringilla Vigo. And there's quite a few players that seem upset that Fringilla is like pegged as the kind of the vanilla 10 card in Nilfgaard. So we'll probably, yeah, we'll switch her around with something else and give her an ability when the game transitions to open beta. It's, you know, it's not a huge deal for us to, you know, kind of switch the ability with another card and make her a little bit more interesting at the expense of a character which is less, you know, liked by fans and less known in the lore. So that's something we'll definitely, you know, I'm 99% certain we'll make happen.
One of the best showcases of Gwent's randomness might be McBeard's Treb's Lawn Darts deck. You want to talk about the randomness in that one?
Yeah, basically the idea is that you get as many Trebs, the new trebuchets now that ping every turn. Mm-hmm. You get as many of those lined up on the back row, and then you just drop Sabrina on the other row, and you just kind of cross your fingers every turn. The rule is you can't proc Sabrina with anything else but the Trebs actually hitting her. And then I'm hoping that is the most exciting deck to have people watch.
It is the stream deck.
The stream. I like that Lawn Darts deck. You just kind of hope
it's Lawn Darts, man.
That Sabrina will get hit without your interaction, so it's almost like you get that extra turn of activation without actually having to do it. We'll see.
No, that's nice. I actually was building a similar deck myself, but with Iris, actually. I like the trebuchets a lot at the moment, actually. I think that they might actually be a little bit weak in terms of the value, as in their actual value, not the value of the damage. So we might, by the time that this podcast goes live and by the time the patch goes live, they might actually be 1 or 2 points higher. But I think they're very cool, and they're random by nature, and because it's just whittling away 1 point at a time at the opponent, it doesn't feel like a huge swing that's like, you lost the game because this random thing happened.
But the idea is when you put Sabrina on the board, you are creating the random situation that would be, oh man, if the ping just went there, my opponent could blame it on the random nature. So that's the environment I want to create sometimes when I make decks.
But by that point, you'd probably have 4 trebuchets on the board if you were using Foltest as well, so the likelihood of it happening would be incredibly likely, I would say.
It's going to take a couple games, but I'll make it happen. I'll make it happen.
So I want to know, Rethus, when you design one of these patch cycles, because this is what you're doing, is together everyone is designing an entire cycle of changes to Gwent and the metagame and everything, and all these changes land at once, and sometimes there's over 100 or so, and this coming patch is no exception. So are your changes more geared towards influencing the way Gwent players actually play the game by encouraging like new or creative deck building, or are you trying to focus on responding to community sentiment towards particular cards or particular decks?
It's kind of a combination of lots of different things. I mean, something we do look at is, you know, we have our metric systems and we look at which cards are the least played. And, like, I can tell you, for example, in the current patch that's on live, some of the least played cards are Draug and Wild Boar of the Sea. And Draug and Wild Boar of the Sea have complete reworks for that reason, to make them, you know, considerably more desirable cards to play. There's been some critique about their abilities being boring, and I think that that's kind of an over-exaggeration. I think, you know, Wild Boar of the Sea does a similar ability to, well, a better version of Murtabrekker. But first of all, Murtabrekker is a neutral card. Skellige can have it, can, and there's no real reason, in our opinion, why it's a bad thing to have kind of a second similar version of a card, especially when it's gold. It means it's going to have better stat distribution. And also, this specifically works very well with Skellige's Wounding Axeman. So, you know, you get three charges. It also works well with Hjalmar in that it's exactly five damage, so you can remove the Lord of Unvik. So it's, you know, there's a whole bunch of reasons why it fits very well in Skellige, and you know, I think that some players will always want every single card to be completely drastically different, but that makes the game much harder to learn for new players as well. I mean, you think about by the end of 2017, we want to have somewhere in the region of 500 cards in the game. And, you know, if every single card does something drastically different, that's not really a game that's very easy for players to get into and approach. So I think, you know, we've been doing a lot of standardization to bring some things kind of back in line to a core of the game. And then when we release, you know, then it gives us a lot of room to expand with releasing new cards and new mechanics and things in the future as well.
That's great. I have a question about factions. So I was wondering, as far as the design team is concerned, if there are people who are known for or who gravitate towards specific factions. We know that you play monsters often, but is there somebody on the team that's like do you have like a Skellige guy or like a Northern Realms guy on the or girl on the team? Like people that, you know, if you had like a specific question about a faction, you could say, oh, we could ask this person because they, you know, that's what they play. That's like something they really focus on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so myself, I'm a monster player. I also like to play quite a lot of Nilfgaard. I'm really enjoying Nilfgaard's design, actually. And Maciek, one of our designers, who's also known as Austria, is very much a Skoytel player. Luigi, from some of you may know from our live streams, is very much a Skellige player. I think Pavel from the live streams as well is very much a Skellige player. So yeah, there's different people within the team that kind of tend towards different decks and specific types of play. So yeah, there's different developers, and then, you know, we talk with players, and there's some players that are very specifically you know, rooted in different factions. You know, so if you look at Swim as an example, Swim is very much a Skoytel player. I think Seamel, some of you might be familiar with, is you know, very much a Skellige player. So, you know, I think some people just kind of tend towards a specific archetype. Also, the artwork they sometimes tend towards as well. For me, I love the monster cards, or, you know, the big menacing creatures, Wild Hunt guys.
And so you're saying that there's no Northern Realms guy?
Oh, that's not true. Northern Realms was purposely designed kind of as the vanilla faction to get people into the game. And also, we didn't take enough risks in Northern Realms when converting the game from The Witcher 3. I think if you look at The Witcher 3 version of the game and you look at Northern Realms, it's probably the most similar to the Witcher 3 version of the game of all the factions. Like, monsters is so hyper drastically different from The Witcher 3 version of the game, and so is Nilfgaard, and so is Skoytel. And Northern Realms has some, you know, really quite basic things that are kind of in some ways just leftover legacy things from The Witcher 3, and you know, that's why we've said before, and I know I've spoken to you guys before about it as well, that we, you know, we hope to rework Northern Realms and give them kind of a bit of a facelift.
Well, great stuff. Thanks so much for answering our questions, Rethis. But we do have two questions from our community, also known as the Commandos.
Commando!
Wow.
We have a question here from Truancy, who would like to know. He writes, I would be interested to know if there's any specific examples where players came up with a clever use of a mechanic that the developers didn't realize was possible or abusable.
I mean, that's super easy to answer. The answer is yes. And I'm sure you guys have seen some of the videos before. Like, there's a player that's does a lot of experimental stuff called Deu, and he managed to make infinite chains with the operator in various things. I think at one point he got his score to 1.3 million using Commander's Horn by duplicating it over and over again. He also kind of made the game go into a 30-minute cycle of spawning units that would, obviously he was playing against his friends rather than against real people. But obviously it would force his opponent to forfeit because the amount of time to trigger the actions would take so long. Those things are things we honestly, we knew that certain things might be possible, but we didn't think players would ever actually do them. Some of those players out there have really shown us some really cool things, and they've actually helped us a lot address some of the issues that would have otherwise been in the game.
And you're talking specifically about Margarita there?
Not only. I mean, he did it was a bunch of different things. There were some things with a Gleiss where you could infinitely duplicate a Gleiss with using Decoy and Commander's Horn in order to get a huge amount of points. But there's also things with Margarita and some of the other spawning units as well.
It's interesting. We have another question that comes in today from the Keir. He wants to know, Rethus, what's your personal goal with Gwent? That if you meet this goal, you can look back and say to yourself, yeah, that's it.
That's a very difficult question. I just hope that we'll be able to keep making Gwent for a long time and keep entertaining players. And, if Gwent is something that people are still interested 2 years from now, then I'll be super happy. And so will the rest of the team.
And so will we.
We will both be very happy.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Rethus, for taking the time to hang out with us and be a part of the podcast here in the Commander's Horn studio.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Rethus, could you, for our listeners, this is an audio-only podcast. Could you potentially describe the Commander's Horn studios?
So I would say it's it's luxurious. It's looking out over the Niagara Falls. It's just beautiful. Scenery, everything's super professional. It's a dream come true.
Oh, well, for us as well, Rathis.
The Niagara Falls was just a thing for McBeard. He's near there.
All right. Well, I have one more question for you because there is you are known as Rethus with a Z in some formats and Rethus mm-hmm. with an S in some other formats. If I was referring to you formally to a group of people, perhaps writing your name in a post saying that you are on the podcast, what is the preferred moniker of yours?
You should probably use the Z.
Excellent. Well, then we will. Well, Rethus with a Z, thank you so much for hanging out with us on the podcast today and being so generous with your time. It was great to talk to you again.
It was a pleasure to talk to you guys as well.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, man. It was great to have you.
Thanks so much to Rethus for joining us in the Commander's Horn studio, which overlooks scenic Niagara Falls now, along with all the other great descriptors that our guests have been able to provide us. And the studio, of course, is kept powered by our patrons over at patreon.com/commandershorn, also known as our commandos. This week, we would like to thank Peter S. for joining the ranks and, of course, to everybody for supporting our work.
Yeah, thanks to Rethus, and thanks to everyone for listening. Once again, you can find us on Twitter at Commander's Horn, and you can email us your questions or your feedback. If you want to tell us what you think about our interview with Rethus or the changes coming to Gwent with balance updates, you can email us at Commander's Horn Podcast @gmail.com.
You can find me at McBeardCH on Twitter, McBearded on Twitch, and McBeard on YouTube. Search for me. I am there, and I am putting videos up. I plan on putting one up very soon. Had a couple of great games on the Test Realm, some insane games today, a couple of great games with King Blacktooth as well, a game with Diu, who Reth has mentioned as being someone who frequently finds ways to break the game and just, you know, have very unique decks. So a couple of great games that I hope to post very soon for you.
Yeah, and you can find me on the Twitter at GreyBoxerGwen. And you can find me on Twitch at GreyBoxer. I'm streaming a little bit less, but check out my YouTube channel, GreyBoxer. Me and Mule are hard at work on the next episode of Gwent Folktales.
So what else can we say? It was a great episode. I hope you all enjoyed it.
But until next time, this is GreyBoxer.
And this is McBeard.
Best of luck
on the path.